Okay, we're going to start on Daf Nun Vav Amud Aleph at the top, about 10 lines down, Meitiv Ravina. We left off yesterday discussing who the author of our Mishnah is. That was because Rava told us that Rabbi Elazar has a problem with our Mishnah. Rabbi Elazar has a problem with the Mishnah because our Mishnah says that Trumat Maaser Shel Demai is included in the list of items that you pay a chomesh on, that you pay an additional fifth. If you eat Trumat Maaser Shel Demai by mistake, v'shogeg, then you must compensate by paying back the Kohen Karen plus a chomesh. And Rabbi Elazar wants to know who's machmir in a dinei derabanan. Maser shel demai is a din derabanan. Who's machmir in such a case to force you to pay one and a fifth like the din doraisa of Trumat Maser Vadai? So Amar Rav Nachman Shmo, Rav Nachman in the name of Shmo, answers and says that the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. Because Rabbi Meir believes that the chamim many times asu chizuk li divrehem, even in dinei derabanan, strengthened the dinei derabanan like shel Torah and made it as if it was min haTorah. Now, the Gemara says, well, if that's the case, Meitiv Rav Sheshet. Rav Sheshet challenges such a question or such an answer of Shmuel because we find in other places that Rabbi Meir is actually Mekil when it comes to there. It's Meiser Sheni Shel Demai. In Meiser Sheni Shel Demai, we see that Rabbi Meir is more Mekil than the Chachamim. And the Gemara then says, "I'm Rav Yosef." Rav Yosef said, "Wait, you're mixing apples and oranges. You can't compare these cases when it comes to Maaser Sheni Shel Demai. When it comes to Pidyon, when it comes to redemption, you're right. Rav Meir is Mekil. But when it comes to Achila, when it comes to eating, then both in Maaser Sheni and in Trumat Maaser Shel Demai, Rav Meir is going to be Machmir. And that will explain why Rav Meir is the author of our Mishnah, because he's explaining about eating. Eating B'shogeg, Trumat Maaser Shel Demai in our Mishnah, there he's Machmir. Also, we brought the case of Siton, the case of the wholesaler selling. And there, Rav Meir was also Machmir because it was a din in Achila. On the other hand, when it came to Pidyon, that's the place where we see Rav Meir be Mekil. So now Ravina brings a question and challenges this assumption that Rav Meir is Machmir when it comes to Achila and he's Mekil when it comes to Pidyon. Because he says, Okeach min anachtum, someone who buys bread or buying loaves from a baker. Maser min achama alotonenet, umin atonenet alachama. Person who purchases bread from, this is a nachtom amaret, nachtom we're not certain has taken off challah as well as trumot masrot, anything that needs, any of the matnot that need to be taken off. So again, we're talking about demai over here. And this demai, what does Rabbi Meir suggest? Rabbi Meir suggests, well, with this demai, a person can be mafrish, he's mekil here, and can be mafrish from the hot on the cold and the cold on the hot. The indication of cold and hot, at least according to Rashi, and we're going to follow Rashi's pshat through here, is that the cold and the hot are indicative possibly of different days, possibly that they came, one came yesterday, one came today, or one is better and one is worse, meaning that bread, which is hot, is fresh, and that's much better bread, and cold is bread that's old or stale from the day before. So these are indicative of what seems to be two types of bread. And then we also say midfusim arbe, from different forms or different molds, that they're different shaped breads that he's selling. And the assumption of the Gemara according to Ravina is that when he's selling different molds, that means that it's possibly came from different suppliers, that the nachtom, the baker, got this from different suppliers, and that's why it's in different molds. If you got them from different suppliers, then how can you be mafrish one on the other, right? How could you be mekil to do this? On the other hand, in this Bryce, we see that Rabbi Meir is mekil. So when it says bishlamo tzenet alachama, the fact that Rabbi Meir is mekil when it comes to hot and cold, that we can say is like Rabbi Yulai. Damar Rabbi Yulai, minayin l'toreim minara aliyafeh, shetrumato truma. How do we know that when you mix and match qualities of produce, when you're being mafrish trumot masrot, in general, when one is mafrish trumot masrot, he must be mafrish from the same quality, the same type of produced and the same quality of produce. But what happens if a person doesn't? He mixes and matches qualities of produce. So over here, Rabbi Lai has a position that a person who does use different quality, meaning he takes the truma from the lower quality produce on produce that is of higher quality, how do you know that the truma is successful, meaning that his mafrish truma works and it's no longer tevel, but he still violated nisur? That the pasuk says that you will not be held accountable for a chet when you remove the chelev, meaning that you remove the truma from this item. Meaning that if the Torah is saying that there won't be a chet But that only works if it's Kodesh. Meaning that only if you are successful in actually making the Truma into Truma could you be in violation of Chet. So, must indicate that you are successful at being Mafresh Truma. That's what the Pasuk says. The Pasuk says that in instances where you are supposed to be Mafresh Truma to Maaser, you're supposed to do that even qualities, and therefore you will not be held accountable, you won't have a Chet. But on the other hand, if you don't take it from equal qualities, you will be subject to a Chet that you will have violated in Isur. Well, you can only violate Isur if you're actually successful at doing something. And that's what Rabbi says. What are you successful at doing? You're actually successful at being Mafresh Trumot Masrot. That's why we can indicate or we can learn from here that when you take different qualities, you are successful, even though you violate Isur. So that we can say by the hot and cold, we can explain away. One's fresh, one's not fresh. That we can explain according to Rabbi Eli. Because by a Maser Vadai or Truma Vadai, there we say don't do it. And if you do it, you violate Isur, but it's successful. Here, it's only a chashash mi derabanan. It's a safek mi derabanan because we're talking about demai here, whether it's chumot, demasro, or mumfresh from here. And therefore, we say, you know what? We'll be mekil in this instance to allow you to do it, even mina yafeh ala ra'ar ira ala yafeh. So that's, we solved that problem. Ela, afilu mi tfusim harbei. If you're actually taking it and you bring mafresh now, chumot, demasro, from multiple different forms, then lichush dilma ati lifushim mina chiyuv ala patur, mina patur ala chiyuv. Then we have a bigger suspicion or a bigger issue, which is that if we're really talking about multiple suppliers over here. When we speak about multiple suppliers, that means you have different Amei Aretz supplying this Nachtom. Different Amei Aretz might actually have different views of their Truma and Maser. Some of them might actually take off Maser, and some of them might not. And then when you actually aggregate them all together and are now trying to take off Truma to Maserot from all of them in one shot, there's a possibility that you're being Mafresh Truma or Maser from a set of breads that already had Truma Maser removed from them. So when you take Truma Maser from this grouping of breads, it doesn't help the other breads not to be Tevel anymore. Or the other way around, if you are Mafresh from the Tevel, which was possibly from a Amaris that was not Mafresh, and you are Mafresh Truma Maser, so you're successfully being Mafresh, but you're also being Mafresh more than necessary because you're also being Mafresh for stuff that was already put or produce that already had Truma Maserot to bring removed from it. Now you're taking off extra produce and you're giving it to going in the chain of Maser and Truma, which it really isn't. It really isn't Maser and Truma. It's really Chulin because you gave an excess of what you were supposed to give. So how could Rabbi Meir allow this to happen? If Rabbi Meir allows this to happen, that means he's Mekel even by Achila. That means that he's letting you do something. He's letting you be Mafresh from different forms, even though you're going to come to eat it now, and there's a possibility that something could go wrong or something could be wrong with this Hafrasha. Nevertheless, you see Rabbi Meir being Mekel here with regards to Achila. So now, Amar Abaye. Abaye now looks back over the whole Gemara and says, listen, there are different players here, different statements that are made and different questions that are asked. And Abaye goes back and says, I'll tell you where I think the questions are good, and I'll tell you where I think the answers are good. So Amar Abaye, Rabbi Elazar Shapir Kakashule. Rabbi Elazar makes a lot of sense, the question that he asked. The question that he asked in our Mishnah is, why is Trumat Maser Shel Demai, why are we Machmir to take off one, or force the person to pay one and a fifth when he eats it Bishogeg? That seems to be too big a chumrah for a din dirabanan. So he says, Rabbi Elazar's question is a good question. Ushmuel lo shapir kamishani le. Now, Shmuel's answer to him is that the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. And Abaye says now that that answer is not a good answer. Why? The Gashler Rabbi Elazar mita bidei shemayim, umshalei Shmuel mita bidbeisdin. Meaning that we're talking again about apples and oranges. Why is it apples and oranges? Because the Mishnah, the punishment for someone who eats Truma, or Trumat Maaser, this is talking about Vadai, is mita bidei shemayim. Right? That's mita, the Kadosh Baruch Hu takes care of it, the person dies, it's mita bidei shemayim. On the other hand, a person who violates a Isur Erva, or we have a problem with Ishit Ish, that's a problem with Mitat Beis Din. That's something that can be punished, there can be capital punishment executed by a Beis Din here. That indicates it's much more Chamor. If that's the case, the reason Rabbi Meir is Machmir Bagitin might simply have to do with the fact that it's a Din that it has a greater Chumrah involved with it, that it's a Mitat Bidei Beis Din. The Beis Din can execute, and that indicates something that is very Chamor. So there, Rabbi Meir is Machmir. He's Machmir, even Dinei Drabanan, to uphold or to strengthen the dinim that revolve around the Rayot and Eshidish. But over here, maybe in our Mishnah, he would agree that maybe you don't have to be Machmir because we're just talking about Mita Bidei Shemayim. So that's one question. Dilma, shiny mita base and the chamira. Maybe base is different because it's more chamor. Now Rav Sheshet lo shapir kamotiv le. Then Rav Sheshet challenged Shmuel's answer, right? And he challenged those answers. Abai says that challenge on Shmuel's answer is not a good challenge. Why? Tkarmeinu mita umotiv Rav Sheshet's love, right? So now what's the problem here? The problem is that where was Rav Sheshet's question from? His question was from Meiser Sheni. Person who eats Meiser Sheni inappropriately, meaning that he doesn't take it up to Yerushalayim and eats it back at home without eating to Yerushalayim, he only violates a lav. Dichtiv lo tuchal lechol b'sherecha. You're not allowed to eat it in your gates, meaning that you aren't allowed to eat Meiser Sheni locally, you have to take it up to Yerushalayim. So now we have Rav Sheshet challenging Shmuel, who's talking about mitat Bezdin, Rabbi Meir's Machmer, or even if we're talking about the Mishnah, which is Mita Bidei Shamayim, those are both Inyane Mita. Those are talking about issues that are very chamur because they have death penalty associated with them. And he's asking a question for Meiser Sheni, which is just a lav. Maybe Rabbi Meir would be Maker by Meiser Sheni because it's only a lav. In the other two cases, he's Machmer because it's Mita. Now, Ulamai Demoti Rav Sheshet, even though Rav Sheshet's question is not a good question, nevertheless, Rav Yosef Shapir Kamishayle. Rav Yosef's distinction in Rabbi Meir is a good distinction. What was the distinction that Rav Yosef made? Rav Yosef made the distinction above that Rabbi Meir is Maker and Pijon and Mach So that's a good, Rav Yosef's answer is a good answer, because that happens to be true also. Even though maybe Rav Sheshet's question is misplaced, nevertheless, what Rav Yosef says about Rav Meir happens to be true. That Rav Meir is Meiko by Pidyon, and is Machmir by Achila. Well, if that's the case, then Ravina's question that we just had is a good question, because we see by Nachtom that Rav Meir is Meiko, and that's an Indian of Achila, and we still see his Meiko. Ravina, Ad Moti bin Nachtom, so why? Rabbi says, well, Ravina is bringing a question from a Mishnah about Nachtom, about a baker. Sadly, me platar. Why does he ask the question from, why does he bring proof to the statement of Rav Yosef from platar? We have another Mishnah that's not. We have a selective disclosure here. He's only bringing a Mishnah that's question or problematic for Rav Yosef, but he doesn't bring the Mishnah that's actually supportive of Rav Yosef's position. That's not. We have a Mishnah, a lukiach min a platar. Someone who buys from a platar is also a baker. Masir mi kol tefus utfus de Rav Meir. Rav Meir says, then, in that instance, you have to differentiate. And every different form, you're going to have to take off a separate maser, because we're worried about mixing up different masrot, because they come from different suppliers. So what are you going to say now? Because now we have two mishnayot. One mishnah, Rav Meir is Meiko, and one mishnah, Rav Meir is Machmir. In the case of Nachtom, by the baker he's Mikio, by a platar he is Machmir. So how are you going to reconcile between those two positions of Rabbi Meir? That we don't have any problem. Platar mitrei platar gav zeven. Generally, a platar is more of like a wholesale baker or an aggregating baker, where he gets supplies from multiple different farmers or different suppliers. And since he has different suppliers, then we have bichoshesh for the different masrut by dfus. On the other hand, Nachtom, right? Nami mechad gav. This oven, an Achtom and a baker in general gets his supply all from one supplier, either one farmer, one supplier, and therefore even though he's making different forms, that's not an issue because we assume it's all this baker that's doing it, and it's all from one supplier. So therefore, in the end, according to Abaye, first of all, Rav Elazar's question is a good question in the Mishnah, and we have no answer to Rav Elazar's question because he rejects Shmuel's explanation of the Mishnah being Rabbi Meir, because he says that the cases aren't parallel. Rabbi Meir is talking about a case in Gittin, he's talking about a case of Mita Bidei Adam. Over here, we're talking about Mita Bidei Shamayim. And he says, in addition to that, Rav Sheshet's question on Shmuel is not a good question, so the challenge from Meiser Sheni is not a good challenge, but Rabbi Yosef's answer is a good answer, which is that Rabbi Meir actually makes a distinction between Achila and Pijon. By Pijon he's Meikel, and by Achila he is Machmir. Based on that, he says, how do we explain the Mishnah of Nachtom, where Ravina asks that it seems to be that Rabbi Meir is Meikil, even by Achila? We say, well, there's another Mishnah called Platar, and there's a difference between a Platar and Nachtom. There, one of them, Rabbi Meir is Machir, and one is Meikil, and the difference has to be with exactly what the problem is, whether it's Chashash from multiple suppliers. In a case where there's a Chashash from multiple suppliers, Rabbi Meir will be Machmir, because it's Achila. In a case, when we can make a case with the general situation with a Nachtom, which is that it comes from a single supplier, then we're not going to be Machmir over here, because there's no reason to be Machmir for the Achila. Shiva, because even with Fusimar Bay, we can assume generally that that does not come from multiple suppliers. But in the end, we don't have an answer to who's the author of Mishnah, or how do you explain this Chumrah in Maaseh Shadmai of our Mishnah. Rava says, on the other hand, Amar Shmuel Shapir Kamishani Le. Rava rejects Abaye and says, no, Shmuel's answer is a good answer. Why? Shem Mita Ba'olam. Abaye's distinction was that if Rabbi Meir says something by Mita Beis Din, doesn't mean that he says something by Mita B'dei Shemayim. Rava says, that's not true. When we talk about Mita, when you talk about death penalties, it doesn't matter if the death penalty is executed by Beis Din, or the death penalty is meted out by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Both of those are in the same class called Mita. And since they're in the same class, then if Rabbi Meir is Machmer by Gittin, we can assume he's going to be Machmer over here by Trumat Maser. Because Trumat Maser is also subject to Mita, a different type of Mita, a Mita B'dei Shemayim. Okay, according to Rava, Rabbi Sheshes' challenge might not be a good challenge, because again, he's bringing a question from a lav, from a simple lav, rather than Mita. So maybe Rabbi Sheshes' question is not such a good question. But according to Rava, at least there is an answer to Rabbi Lezer's query about who the author of the Mishnah is, because he thinks that Shmuel's answer, that it's Rabbi Meir, is a good answer. I just note here, but we read the Gemara according to Rashi, but this was learned over here that the question by Nachtom, when the question of hot and cold and multiple with Fusim, he connects them all together in a single unit or a single issue. I mean, Rashi divided them up. It says hot and cold, and then the second issue is multiple tefusim, multiple forms. Tosafot says, no, the question here is when it's hot and cold and there are multiple tefusim. When you have both issues, that's when you have this machlokes, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. But if you're missing one or the other, then it's possible, or there would be, that Rabbi Huda would agree to Rabbi Meir's position. So, just noting Tosafot, we're not going to do it, but just so you know that there is a different way to read the Gemara according to Tosafot. Okay, now we get to a Mishnah. Our previous Mishnayot dealt with Onah. Onah meaning overcharging or underpaying for an object. But so far, we dealt with items or issues that do have Onah. What about items or issues that possibly don't have Onah? And that's what the Mishnah has a list of over here. These are certain objects that are not subject to Onah. They're not subject to the Din of Onah. We'll see later on in the Gemara what that means, not subject to the Din of Onah. Avadim, Shtarot, Vakarkot, Vekdeshot. These four categories. Avadim, it's Avid Kanani we're talking about here. Shtarot, documents that document loans. And Hakarkot is real property. And Ekdeshot, something that belongs to Ekdesh is not subject to Onah. Inlam, in addition to not having Onah, these items, these four items also, Inlam Toshulme Kefo, if they are stolen by a Ganav, then the Ganav does not pay Kefo in these instances. Velo Toshulme Arav Chamisha, and not four or five times. Okay, four or five times is only Shayach here really to Hekdeshot, because you only pay four or five times when you shecht a set or a shor that you stole. Over here, if you're talking about Avadim, Shtarot, and Karkot, they're not a shor and a set. So the only one this is relevant to is really Hekdesh. Stole a shor, a set of Hekdesh, and then shechted them. You are not Chayav, Arba, V'Chamisha. Shomechinam, Inu Nishba. Shomechinam does not take a Shvu'at HaShomim when it comes to these items. And you know, so Sechar, Inu Meshalem. And Shomer Sechar does not pay in these instances. All of these punishments, or all of these issues, or all of these solutions that are brought to Beis Din, do not apply to these four items. The Gemara will have a limud for each one of them. Now, Rabbi Shimon says that kochim you can't look at as a single unit or a single entity. Kochim actually can be subdivided, because there's kochim shu chayav b'achrutan. There's certain kochim where you are obligated to take care and ensure that Hekdesh gets the item. So, for instance, a person takes a neder to bring a korban. If he takes a neder to bring a korban, and then he designates a certain animal to bring the korban, the animal's lost, that does not dispense with his nether. He still has to be mikayim, he still has to uphold the nether that he took, and have to replace the animal. And a person takes a nidava, a person makes a donation, says this animal will be to Hekdesh, the animal disappears. That's Hekdesh's problem in a sense, because it's already Hekdesh, it belongs to Hekdesh, they've acquired it. It's Hekdesh's problem. It's not his issue, because he only offered the animal. He didn't obligate himself personally. It could be true also maybe with korbanot, if he has to bring, he's obligated to bring a korban, whether it's a chatat or other korban. If he designates a korban and it's not brought, he still has to bring the korban, because he still hasn't brought a chatat. He's not nitchaper on the chait. So in those instances where you are chayav b'achriutan, you're responsible to replace the animal if it does not reach the Beit HaMikdash, or it's not brought to either the treasury of the Mikdash, or it's not given on the Mizbeach. In those instances, you actually have a monetary interest in the Hekdesh, because as long as the Hekdesh is still around, you aren't chayav to replace it, meaning that there is what's called gorem de mamon. The Hekdesh being around causes you to save money. So Machlok is in other places in Chas, where the gorem de mamon is kemamon domi. Does it actually have a monetary value? Or it's not monetary value, where gorem de mamon does not have monetary value. monetary value, but in either instance, the fact that you have some interest, some monetary interest, or some interest in this animal indicates that it doesn't all belong to Hekdesh. So then that, Rabbi Shimon argues, in those cases, you will be subject to Onah, Tashlumi Kefel, Arba Chamisha, all these dinim will apply because you as a Hedyot, you as a layperson, do have some interest in here. On the other hand, when you're not responsible, meaning that the animal belongs to Hekdesh and you have no responsibility to replace it, then you have no interest in this animal. If you have no interest and it really truly belongs to Hekdesh, in that case, he agrees that Hekdesh is precluded from Ona and Lehem Ona and all the other items here. Yudah Omer, Afro Mocher Sefer Torah, Behema Umarglit and Lehem Ona. Yudah says that a person sells a Sefer Torah, an animal, or a precious stone, don't have, are not subject to Ona, in addition to the list that we had before, the four items. He adds another three. We only enumerated the first four, which is Avadim, Shtarot, Karkaot, and Hekdesh, but these additional three that you're adding are not part of the list, and we'll see in tomorrow's daf what the source for, what the reasoning behind Rabbi Yehuda is. Now, the Gemara says, how do you know that Onah is, these items, meaning Karkaot, Shtarot, Avadim, and Hekdesh, are not in the Parsha of Onah? How do we know that? Because the Gemara says, well, the Tanra Banan, V'chitim kormem karlamitecha, if you sell something from your to a friend, O kanami adamitecha, or you acquired it from him, Davar haniknem yadia. This is a limud that we saw earlier in the Machlokas of Yochanan Reish Lakish, about whether this is talking about whether the Torah thinks that Kinyan Kesef or Kinyan Meshicha is the Ikar Kinyan. We saw over here, Reish Lakish's proof is from this Pasuk, because it says Okanamiyad. Kanamiyad means something that is transferable, that is moved, property that is movable, not real property, but movable back and forth. Since that property is moved back and forth, that's called metaltalin. So Yatsu Karkot, Shena metaltalin. So that it precludes or excludes from the parsha of Onaa anything that's not a metaltalin, which is Karkot, real property or not metaltalin. Yatsu Avadim, Shukshula Karkot. Avadim, or Evid Kanani in general, is equated to Karka like property because it says in Parshat Bahar Devit Chautem Otam Livnechem Acharechem that you can pass on to a Yerusha, to your children, your Eved Knani, just like property. So they are treated like property according to the Torah. If they're like property, if property does not have Onah, so too, Avadim will not have Onah. Yatsu Shtarot, Shtarot are precluded here, Dichtiv, Vichitim, Keru, Memkar. Right, it says over here, when you sell something, Shigufo Machor, that you're selling something where the object itself is Machor sold, and the object Shigufo Kanoi is being acquired, meaning that there is inherent value. What's being sold or exchanged over here is an item who has inherent value. Yatsu Shtarot, Shen Gufan Machor, Ven Gufan Kanoi. That the reason you sell a shtar is not for what the inherent value of the paper that it's written on. The reason that you sell a shtar is because what's written in the shtar. What's written in the shtar is indicative of a transaction or indicative of some other obligation. And that obligation is what you are selling. So you're selling something not that has inherent value, but something that is representative value because it gives you the ability to collect. From here we say, Mocher Shtarotav Lebosim, person who sells his shtarot, he takes the paper of the shtarot, say it's a used shtar already, it's not useful to him anymore, he sells it as a cork or a plug for the perfume bottles, the paper. In that case, they will have Onah. Why? Because you're selling the shtar there not for what's written on it, but the paper, the actual paper that it's written on, that's actually what you're selling for. Where it says, Pshita, what else would you have thought? Of course you're selling it for its inherent value. So where it says, Lafukim Yidrav Kahano, this comes to exclude Rav Kahano, Damar Ein Onah Leprutot, that we had a machlokas earlier between Rav Kahana and Levi about whether, what's the minimum amount of Onah. So Rav Kahana made a statement that Ein Onah Leprutot, we saw that this machlokas HaRishonim, what it means Ein Onah Leprutot, does it mean that the object itself must be at least an Isar's worth, even though the Onah is less than an Isar, or minimum amount of Onah, I mean the minimum amount of overcharge, you can have to be an Isar, a full coin. So that's Machlokas HaRishonim. But either way, Rav Kahana says Ein Onah Leprutot, which means that there's no Onah with very small items. And over here, clearly the paper that you're selling to plug the holes of the Bosim is something that's a pretty minimum value. So Kamash Milan, Yesh Onah Leprutot, so our conclusion from here is that there is Onah by Prutot, because here, by paper, we're saying there is Onah. If there is Onah by paper, it means that even in small amounts, we're going to say there is Onah. Not like Levi. Hekdeshot. Why are Hekdeshot excluded? I'm Rakra Echav. Right? It says here, when you're talking about Chitim Kormem Kala Mitecho, Kanami Al Mitecha, Lo Tunu Ishet Achiv. So you can't be Onak applies to a brother. A brother means another layperson. Hekdesh, achiv velo hekdesh, means your brother, not hekdesh. Hekdesh is not classified, we see this in many places, not classified as re'ehu or achiv. It's not classified as a transaction or a interaction between two lay people, but rather hekdesh is in its own category. And therefore, when the pasuk specifically says achiv, that means achiv and not hekdesh. Tosus is very interesting. Tosus in the top of the Amud over here that discusses the issue of shtarot. What are we talking about here when it comes to shtarot? The Gemara has a question in other places whether one can actually sell a shtar. I mean, is one able to sell a shtar that has a loan enumerated in it? When you sell that loan, are you then able to be mochel? The person who sold it, can he be mochel even after he sold it? And the Gemara's conclusion in many places seems to be that the ability to sell shtarot is only a din derabanan. It's not a din mina Torah. Now, why is that a problem? Because over here we're talking about ona'ah. Ona'ah is a problem mina Torah. So here we're going to have the Torah precludes a shtar from being subject to ona'ah, a din d'oraisa. And what's the situation? The situation must be when you're selling a shtar. Well, if you're selling a shtar, it must mean that mid'oraisa mina Torah, you're able to sell a shtar. So Tosfos, now, is it a bind in a sense because we think that shtarot can only be sold midirabanan, and now we see this argument seems to indicate that shtarot can be sold midiraita. So, Tosus gives one answer which indicates that in Ochanami that shtarot could be sold midiraita, but then Tosus gives a second answer which he seems to lean towards, which is that no, mechirat shtarot is only a din derabanan. Well, if you have a din derabanan, how can you have onah d'oraisa? So Tosus creates a case, a very interesting case, where it's not he's selling the shtar. It happens to be a transaction between a malven aloveh, a creditor and a debtor. The creditor lends money with a shtar. So now he has a shibud, he has a milveh b'shtar, which entitles him to encumber the property of the loveh, of the debtor. So now what happens? The debtor comes back to him and says, I want to buy the shtar back from you. I can't repay the loan, but I want to buy the shtar because I want to change this loan from an encumbered loan or a milveh b'shtar to a milveh al peh. So if I can change it from milveh al shtar peh, I'm willing to pay you money for that. So Tosa says, if I'm willing to pay you money to buy back that right or that shibud, then the unah here taking place in the loan or with the shtar might have nothing to do with the loan agreement itself or about what's written in the shtar, but about what the shtar enables you to do. So the purchase here is about an inyan that's an inyan d'oraisa, which is shibud, and you're buying it back, and that's why it's unah d'oraisa, but not that this is actually a sale of a shtar, which Tosus classifies as only dirabanan. And the last explanation that Tosus brings, he brings from the Rabbeinu Chaim, that he's Kanamina Torah, imyesh loveh karkaot, shimarchor lo shibud sheyesh lo bekarkaot. The malveh can sell the loan in an instance where the loveh actually has property, because since there's an encumberment of that property, he's not actually selling the loan, but he's actually selling the shibud. And your ability to sell the shibud would be different than your ability to sell a shtar that just has a loan on it. And in selling the shibud, that could work d'oraisa, and in selling the shibud d'oraisa would also create an ability to have what we call the onah d'oraisa. Right now, continuing in the Gemara, the assumption of the Gemara here is that whenever the word yado is used, it means literally from hand to hand, because that's what we just said. We said davar niknem yad liyad. The drasha from the pasuk of chitim kuru memkala mitecho kano miyad amitecha kano miyad amitecha. When you kone mi yad, there we said yad means literally his hand. So elamato, if that's the case, dichtiv, how are you going to explain the pasuk vayikachet kol etzo miyado, that he took all his land from his hand? Obviously, one cannot take land from another person's hand. You can't hold all the land in your hand. It's just not possible. I mean, it's exactly why we're saying yado does not include karka in this case of our pasuk. So, hachanami, tchol arbi yade, ala nakidle? You're going to explain, or anakidle, that you're going to explain that he was holding all the land in his hand? Ela, mirshuto. Must be the word yado over here means his possession. Not literally his hand, but rather hand is representative of possession. Hachanami, why can't we say that in our pasuk also over here, mirshuto? Why do we have to say that the yad, or the word yado in our pasuk means literally from hand to hand, meaning only metaltling? Why don't we suggest that yado in our pasuk means possession? If it means possession, then we could have included karkaot. So where it says, wait a minute, if you want to suggest now that the word yado does not literally mean yad, and it really means birshuto, what are you going to do with these other limudim? Now you're going to suggest that the word yado does not literally mean yado in the rest of the Torah. Vatanya, Rebbe Raisa, im himatzei timatzei biyado. Here's a case of gneva, where and ganav is chayav to pay kefel. That's only when it's himatzei mitametzei do. Only ela yado. I would have thought only yadomi, only when he makes a kinyan on the gneva by physically picking it up in his hands. He makes a kinyan, mishicha, a kinyan, a ba, does some sort of kinyan with his hand. That's the only way he can take possession of a gneva or take possession of a stolen object in order to have to pay kefel. But kagoch atzero v'kafivo minayin. How do I know that his property can also act on his behalf to make a kinyan and then be mechayev him kefel? Tamadomer himatzei. The double lashon of himatzei means mi kol makom, no matter what. Now, obviously, the case is not where an animal or an object shows up in your property and then you're automatically a thief because it takes possession of you, but rather, well, a case where an animal enters into your field and you decide, you know what, I'm going to keep it. You close and you lock the door to steal the animal. In that case, by your locking or closing the door, you didn't make a kinyan, a physical kinyan on the animal by lifting in your hand, but your chatzer now, because of your action, will make a kinyan on the animal, and you'll be chayav for the gneva and be chayav kefil. So now, time dechtiv rachmani matzei timatzei. Only because we have that additional lashon of matzei timatzei do we include other items. Halav hachi, had it not written matzei timatzei, avamino koyecha dechtiv yado yado mamash. I would have thought the only time you'd be chayav and kefil by gneva is yado mamash, literally, if you took it in your hand. So you see, we're interpreting the word yad to mean literally yad. Tanya, we have another brisa of Natan Biada. When giving a get to a woman must receive it in her hand. She must accept or receive the get. How do I know that it doesn't just work when you give the get to her hand physically? That's the only time a get works. What about Gaga Chatzera V'Karpifa? What about her property? Is her property, can her property function as a shliach or as a yad, an extension of her yad, in order to acquire on her behalf? Again, we discussed this in other places, whether it's chatzirah as nitrabe mipnei yad or mipnei shlichut, and also whether what type of chatzir has to be. It has to be a chatzir ha mishtameret, that she has to actually have shmirah over this chatzir. But how do we know that's true? Minayin, how do we know that when it's not literally your hand, it still works? Tamal omer v'natan. Mikol makom, natan means no matter what. Time adichtav rachmana v'natan. Because the puzzle says the word v'natan, which is an inclusive term. Halav achi, had it not written v'natan, avamino kohecha dichtav yado yado mamash. We would have thought that literally, in order for her to be divorced, she must receive the get in her hand. That's the only way she could be divorced. Ella ko yado yado mamashu. The Gemara concludes, no, that yad in all these instances must be literally a yad. So what are you going to do with the pasuk from Bamidbar? Vishani hatam, the case by where we originally brought the question from about the case in Bamidbar, by yikachet kol atzom yado hatam delek lemeimar hachi ella bishuto. Right over there, it's different because there's no other way to explain it except bishuto. So whenever we can explain yado to mean literally yad, we will. In cases where it's impossible to explain it in such a manner, we won't say yad, rather we will say it means birshuto. So rather than our case being the exception and saying that generally yado means birshuto in his possession, yado, when you say yad mamash, that's the exceptional case, it's the other way around. Yado means literally yad, and that will be the standard, or that will be the norm. On the other hand, when it says yado, and we interpret it as a birshuto, as his possession, that'll be the yotzei dofen, that'll be the exception, because that's the case where we're forced to explain it that way, because we can interpret it as being yado mamash. So now, by Rabbi Zeira, schirut, yesh lo ona, o in lo ona. When it comes to rentals, do rentals have onas? Are they subject to ona? So we're not probably talking about rentals of karko here, because we said karko is already excluded from ona, but we're talking about rentals. For instance, he rents a behema. Here's where he rents a behema. Is there, or is that subject, that transaction subject to ona? So memkar amar rachmana, the pasuk says, v'chi Tim Piru Memkar Lamitacha, which sounds like a sale transaction. So that avalos chirut, but that doesn't include renting. That's sales, but not rentals. Odilma loshna, maybe it makes no difference. So Amalei Abaye Miktiv Memkar Leolam. When it says Bechitim Piru Memkar Lachicha, it doesn't say that it's a permanent sale. Memkar Stamaktiv, it just says that it's a sale. V'hai Nam B'yomi Mechirhu. And a rental is like a short-term sale. It's a short-term sale, and so if it requires a sale, we have a sale here. It's just not a permanent sale. It's a short-term sale. So because of that, it will be included in ona'a. Now, the obvious question here is that schirut really doesn't work this way. We know throughout Shas, and Tosfos raises the question here, that schirut does not really indicate balut, that you really do not own the property. When you're socher the property, you are not the true balim or owner of this property. You have rights, you have a leasehold, you have the ability to use the output or the product itself, but you don't have a balut or ownership in the item. Tosa says that it must be over here, and essentially Tosa is in a real bind because Tosa says Veish Lamar the Hocha Gabi Onak Tiv Memkar Yumiyutar the Rabot Schirut, because it says Vechitim Kru Memkar. So he says that double lashon of Memkar, maybe that's the ribui for Schirut. I mean, this is not a din in general in Schirut, but it's a din in Ona. That Ona includes Schirut because of this extra limud. So you know that Tosa is stuck because he has to go to a limud. He has to make a limud that's not found in the Gemara to include Schirut, because the statement statement of Abaye over here seems to be strange, because this is not a general principle we find in Schirut. So Tosa says it's unique to Ona'a. So now, by Rava, chitin v'zara'an v'karaka mahu. Person who takes chitin, wheat, and then he plants them in the ground, what's the din? Yesh lem ona, or in lem ona. Do they have ona or not? Why? Keman d'shajin v'kado damion. Are they like, if they're placed in a vessel, meaning that they are metaltalin, v'yesh lem ona, and therefore they'd be subject to ona. O dilma batlinu agav kara ara. Since they're planted in the ground, they are batel to the karka in which it's in, which is that they are nullified against, or with the karka that they're sitting in, and therefore they'll be subject to the din of ara of karka, and karka does not have ona. Hey, Chidamik, Michael says, okay, what's the case, first of all? Madamar Ihu Shaddai Bashita, that he says, the person from the seller says, I planted 6 seeds per, or whatever the measurement is, I planted a certain number of seeds or a certain number of plantings per square area. And then witnesses come, and they said he only planted 5. Meaning that either the workers that did it, or they find they have edim that saw him planting, and they said they planted at a much lower rate. The Gemara says, Rava says, when it comes to items that are measured or clearly defined, over there we're not talking about ona anymore. There we're talking about a mekach ta'ut. That is clearly a mistaken or misrepresented a transaction. And ona, when we talk about ona, we're talking about overcharging. We're saying that either there's mechila or there's a, you know, bitul mekach when it gets beyond a certain point. But when we talk about a person representing that a very particular, they did a very particular thing or took a particular action, or that the item measures or is the size, a certain size, and that's what he's selling. If it's not the case, then you don't have ona here, you have a mekach ta'ut, because you misrepresented the item that you were selling. If that's the case, there's nothing to talk about. And Tosfos discusses over here the possibility that it owes from Rav. It sounds like this applies even to Karka. Even though Karka is not subject to Ona'a, Karka is subject to the din of Rav, which is Mekach Ta'ut. If you represent the size of the Karka that you're going to sell, or you give a specific measurement, then you must sell that measurement. If you don't, it's not Ona'a, it's Mekach Ta'ut. Ella, so what's the case? He says, I planted what it needed. And then afterwards they see when it grows there, he didn't put enough. So here it's an umdun adidas. He doesn't declare a very particular amount. So it's not a mekach ta'ut here. He says, I thought I planted enough for it. And then it wasn't enough. And therefore, the issue, it revolves around not a mekach ta'ut, but an issue of ona'a. So now, yesh lem ona'a, or yesh lem ona'a. Why? Commander Shadi Bikala diamonds, if they're placed in a kli, and therefore they yeshlem ona. Now he owes him because these chitim are impacting on the value of the land, and therefore they will be subject to ona, because the amount of chitim he plants will determine the value of this land that he's selling. Or maybe no. Maybe it's batel to the karka. Now it's batel to the karka, they're not subject to ona. So where it says, well, in addition to this, you have the same question with other issues, because there are other issues which only apply to metaltalin and not to karka. For instance, nishbayin aleim or nishbayim aleim. Mishnah and shvuot that says that you only the nishbayim ala karkaot. You don't take a shvuah when it's karka. So you have the same question here. Command shani bekada damyon v'nishbayim aleim. Are they as if they are placed in a utensil and therefore they're metaltalin and you would take a shvuah, or dilma batlinu agavara, or maybe they like the land, you won't take a shvuah. Ve'in nishbayim aleim, and therefore you wouldn't take a shvuah on them because they ain't nishbayim ala karkaot. Omer matiran or ain omer matiran. In addition, we have another question. When the omer comes, when we bring the Omer on the 16th of Nisan, or today, but we don't have an Omer, when 16th of Nisan passes, that changes all produce from being Chadash to Yashan. So now, how we view these seeds? Do we view these seeds as being in the ground, or we view these seeds as being out of the ground? And that will determine whether the Omer affects these seeds. Now, the Gemara says, Eichidan, what's the case here? Because there are very particular rules when it comes to Chadash and Yashan, which is, Ida Ashrush, if it was rooted, Tanina, then we have a mission about this. Ida Lo Ashrush, if it didn't root yet in the ground, we also have Tanina. Why? It's not. The mission tells you particularly or specifically, Im Yishrishu Kodom the Omer, if whatever you planted took root before the Omer was brought on the 16th Nisan, Omer Matiran, then they are no longer Chadash. Even when you harvest them later on, they will be classified as Yashan because the Omer was brought at the time that they already had rooted. V'imlav, had they not rooted, asrim, they're not permitted with this omer. They have to wait until the following year's omer to be mutar, because this omer did not affect them. So ajavo omer abba, until the following omer. So what's the question here? The question is not about whether it's gland or metaltalin. It's a question of whether it rooted or didn't root. The Mara says, lo tzricha dechatzdinu, that he harvested this wheat this year. Before the Omer, he harvested the wheat, so it's still Chadash. Vizarinu, and before this Omer, he plants them again. Now, Kodem Omer, prior to the Omer. Now, if they root, again, if these new seeds root, then they will be subject to the din of the regular Omer. If the seeds rooted, then they are, then for sure, Mutar with this new Omer, because that's the qualification for what is Mutar of the Omer. But over here, he took them out, he harvested them when they were Chadash, and now he puts them in the ground, but they have not taken root yet. And then the Omer passes, and he pulls them out of the ground afterwards. And they never took root, Kodem the Omer, before the Omer. Now, Mao, what's the din? Minkat umeichal minau, to take them out of the ground and now eat them. Why? Kamad deshajin de kado dami, is it as if they are placed in a utensil? Meaning that he harvested them last year, now they would have been Mutar because of the Omer. That was Chadash. That was already harvested. All you have to do is wait for the Omer and that would become Yashan and you could have eaten it. But now what you do, you planted them in the ground again. It's clear if it's Gidule, right, Chadash, or you plant them in the ground again, they're subject to all the rules of regular Chadash, which means if it roots, right, then it will be cleared by this Omer. If it doesn't root, you have to wait till the following Omer. But what the problem here is that it didn't take root, and after the Omer, you pull them out of the ground. So before they've rooted, you pull them out of the ground, but it's already after the Omer. So how do we look at these seeds? Do we look at these seeds as if they were not in the ground when the Omer came, and therefore the Omer took care of them and made them into Yashan, and they're no longer Chadash? Or we say that they're Batel Gavara. Right? Gemara Deshajim Bekado Dami Visharinu Omer. As if they are out of the ground, they've been harvested, it's Chadash, now the Omer passes, they are Mutar. Odil Batlinu Gavara. Or maybe right there, batel to the karka. If they're batel to the karka, means that it's as if they are planted in a sense. Not that they're ashrush, not that they were rooted, but the fact that they're in the ground makes it as if they don't exist here. It's as if they are not free or metaltlin to be cleared by this Omer. And if you'll have to wait until the following Omer, the Gemara leaves this question as a take. Okay, we'll stop over here.